It's my great pleasure to be here and sharing this virtual space with you and share this paper that's been in the making for a while with you, with all of you. So, the 2008 global economic crisis and the killing of a 15-year-old boy, Alexandros Grigoropoulos, in Exarchia, an anti-authoritarian neighborhood of Athens, reshaped the urban solidarity spaces involving the spatial practices of solidarity and struggle. From self-run bakeries to food gathering structures and collective kitchens, the 2008 austerity measures, including the falling of wages, increased unemployment, and the decline of welfare services, combined with the so-called refugee crisis starting from 2015, reactivated the anarchist and anti-authoritarian movement in Greece. This was because of the immediate needs that refugees had in terms of food and shelter, and secondly, because of the threat of attacks by fascists that constructed the refugees as a threat to national security and national identity. Parallel to this, as of 2016, with the closure of the Balkan route, the Greek authorities established 32 refugee camps only on the mainland Greece. Against the backdrop of these regimes of confinement, solidarity groups took the initiative of finding dignified housing solutions for refugees. Exarchia, known for its radical politics, counterculture, and intellectual activist experimentations, a social laboratory for the radical youth, an anarchist and anti-authoritarian space, is delineated as a radical zone. The presence of the riot police in the green uniforms on the strategic corners of the neighborhood before COVID-19, the self-organized language classes run by social centers and cafes, the free medical clinics and assemblies make the neighborhood a unique site of solidarity, anarchy, and security threat for the Greek state. Historically, Exarchia has been the place where acts of political dissent and unrest in the country's post-dictatorial era have been centered. And in recent years, the Athenian anarchist and anti-authoritarian movement has been reinvigorated as a response to the double crisis, the financial and the migratory. While the changing of the government from Syriza, the coalition of the radical left, to Nea Demokratia, the center-right, authorities promised to clean Exarchia from chaos and anarchy. Kyriakos Mitsotakis, the leader of Greece's New Democracy Party, said, "A new generation of terrorists is being bred in Exarchia. Heavy weapons are being circulated, and police are not taking action because there is no political will," and promising to clean up the terrorist-infested neighborhood. The cleaning operation meant the eviction of squads that hosted refugees and migrants, while the management of migration became more hostile and discourses of risk of radicalization among the migrants became visible during my fieldwork. My fieldwork, which started in a radical cafe in Exarchia in 2018 with a group of refugees who were learning English and Greek before continuing their journeys to Northern Europe via human smugglers, is the center of this talk. Based on these observations, the insecuritization of Exarchia, which intensified with the new government's crack on the neighborhood, I use concept of insecuritization to point the institutional practices of actors with different degrees of authority and influence in the production of security, insecurity, and the lived experiences of people affected by these securitizations. Here I draw on Bigo and McCluskey, their Paris approach to studying processes of insecurity and insecuritization. PARIS is an acronym for Political Anthropological Research for International Sociology. And I quote, "This approach concerns itself with the lived experiences of people affected by the practices of those who claim they can decide what is security, insecurity, and fate, be they direct or indirect victims, be they amateurs of security, or just indifferent to the debates but affected by them. These people are all central to the analysis of the field of practices of insecurity. I focus on how Neo-Demokratia governments' discourses on migration, borders, national security that construct refugees, asylum seekers, and solidarity groups as a threat is resisted against by my interlocutors. And I look at how they subvert power and find alternative logics for counter-securitization. In my analysis, I examine different scales of the insecuritization phenomenon beyond micro-macro levels. That's the intertwinements of solidarity, anti-authoritarianism, and migration into Athenian neighborhoods where everyday lived experiences of my interlocutors are complex and multi-layered. This way, the processes involved in insecuritization are discursive, relational processes between the securitizer and the securitized, entangled with tactics that render groups to a threat to sovereign power." This means examining practices of insecuritization not as dualities between the sovereign and the other subjectivities, but rather as complex power relations where the conduct of the self and the other is negotiated. More specifically, the processes of insecuritization that involves the exercise of pastoral power, which is political structures of individualization techniques and of totalization procedures. This, I quote Foucault here, a prelude to what Foucault have called governmentality through the constitution of a specific subject, which is met with counter-pastoral power, that is how not to be governed like that, by that, and in the name of those principles. Counter-securitization, in this sense, encapsulates everyday resistance practices such as collectivization of resources, including language, communication, and translation, towards perceived enemies. It further includes mobilization of communicative and discourse strategies, struggles, and resources to refuse, resist, subvert, disrupt, undermine, and confront the established, to establish the other as a threat. This way, counter-securitization is a response to coercive and authoritarian top-down practices legitimated through state power and solidarity and mutual help for those who need structures of care and protection, such as housing and food. If insecuritization is a state of exclusion or the making of the others as enemies, counter-securitization is working towards inclusion of the others in otherwise excluded spaces. In what follows, I examine how insecuritization and counter-securitization, which is counter-threat, suspicion, and unease, are rationalized and justified by examining how securitization discourses constitute particular types of refugees and migrants, and how solidarity movements navigate these under precarious economic and legal conditions in the city of Athens. I explore the processes and ways in which how insecuritization and counter-securitization as a situated lived experience, which is enacted, enforced, evaded, silenced, or transformed, and always linked to wider ideologies, articulated and practiced discursively in the everyday practices of my interlocutors, creating a counter-epistemic infrastructure. To do this, I will first provide an overview of the ethnographic entanglements experienced in this work, and how ethnography itself brings questions of securitization. Then I discuss securitization of migration in Greece, focusing on the level of security discourses with the change of the new conservative government came into power in 2019. When working with social movements and refugees for whom encountering the police is a cause of everyday unease and tension, ethnographers face the challenge and the gap between critique and activism. Although it's not new that researchers whose work seek to contest social justice issues, such as Franz Boas' seminal work on racial superiority, ethnographers experience the issue of achieving analytical distance and having impact versus activism with those who suffer structural inequalities. Our methods include note-taking, video or audio recordings, interviews, focus groups, and our commitment to engaged research with those who struggle with poverty, police repression, and encampment get entangled with securitizing practices. For example, we produce extensive amount of information and data about our interlocutors. We may also be at risk of reproducing asymmetrical relations, especially in insecuritized settings, and create further enmeshments with researcher-research relationships where power is continuously negotiated. To tackle these issues, Coleman suggests keeping a balance between activism and critique, and mind the risk of betrayal to both things that are important for our scholarship. I have mentioned this elsewhere in line with Blomet in an interview. Research is social action, and separating activism from ethnographic knowledge production involves complex layers of practices and rationalities that are situated and connected to other networks of sociopolitical processes. The Prosfigica apartments, which have been occupied since 2010 by different community groups such as refugees, the unemployed, as well as international and local solidarity and political groups, was another site for my ethnographic work. A football stadium is located at the right in front of the first block of the flats, as you can see in the picture. On Leoforos Alexandras, which is a big road in the center of Athens. The building complex is surrounded by two hospitals and pharmacists, and it is squeezed between Supreme Court and the police headquarters. Rumors often circulate that the government plans to turn some of these buildings into cultural heritage site, annex some of them to the hospitals around the buildings, and build a new parking area. The buildings have been seen as a source of national shame during the Olympics of 2004. The facade of these old buildings, which still carry bullet holes from December 1944 uprising between the British troops and the principal guerrilla war, which had resisted the Germans, was covered with a big tarp to cover national embarrassment, said Themis, one of my interlocutors. Identifying itself as a communal body for everyday life and political struggle, the squatters employ an organizational model that has specific values and methods such as direct action and common property. The squatters participate in local and international struggles such as the Kurdish Freedom Movement in Rojava, as well as defending the Exarchia neighborhood from the police suppression and gentrification. For example, as the government had plans to gentrify Strefi Hill, which is a hill in Exarchia at the time of this research, and according to news shared by squatters, the plans involved cementing the park's paths, cutting down trees, placing cameras, gates, and security posts to control the entrance. The evacuation of squats where refugees and migrants lived means they are sent to camps far from the city, creating a state of exclusion for them, which the movement resisted and refused, but nevertheless could not keep the squats open. The reference to concentration camps and imprisonment of refugees that usually came up in the discourses of my interlocutors were discussed in assemblies. So Monday assemblies were called Sinelefsi, and this was one of the communicative activities where I could build trust with my interlocutors. And this was an activity where everyone sat in a circle and discussed the news and announcements and complaints related to communal life. A person took notes, then decisions were made whether what was communicated was a topic or a theme to be followed up, and interruptions in the assemblies were discouraged. This meant suspension of turn-taking for a long time, and some assemblies lasted until midnight. One's conduct in the Sinelefsi, in the assemblies, was very important, whilst all communication was interpreted from Greek and English to Turkish, French, Arabic, and Persian. Any communicative transgression, interruption, always meant tension. Translation was deliberated through though not always available, in all languages available to the assembly. The efforts that the Sinelefsi made to allow everyone to take a turn while listening for the turn to end, including the translation of it, often meant tensions and diligent calculations of who takes the floor most or the least. As an ethnographer, I had to negotiate my presence as a securitizer and the securitized, and often dealt with vulnerabilities and fragilities this entailed. Whilst I chose to have a low profile in the Sinelefsi, because of my temporary engagement with my interlocutors, vulnerability in the face of insecurity brings us closer to our participants. In time, I became closer to my participants and more aware of the risks that I might bring them, as ethnographic fieldwork can produce lots of details about individuals. For example, my interlocutors shared their experiences of border crossing, imprisonment, conflicts in the neighborhood, and flatmates, as well as inequalities they experienced within their counter spaces. Whilst Greece has been known as a transit country, many border crossers get stuck before continuing their journeys to Europe, and hence they rely on solidarity from collectives and individuals who are broadly framed as the radical left and anarchists and European solidarians. Like many other European countries, a security model that involves defense contractors, along with an emergency frame, risk discourses such as front desk risk analysis, border surveillance systems such as Eurosur. The Greek government employs the same model and invests in new technologies to protect its national security. The Evros River that separates Turkey from Greece is fenced with barbed wire, sound cannons, thermal radars, and surveillance cameras that stop migrants arriving from Turkey. The conservative Nea Dimokratia Party that came into power in July 2019 announced that they will implement a closed camp model, which entails surveillance and security measures akin to prisons for asylum seekers arriving in Greece for the safety of the Greek citizens, which resulted in allegations of pushbacks, which means sending refugees back to Turkey, as of EU-Turkey statement signed in March 2016. The pushbacks on the highly militarized Greek-Turkish borders controlled by the Greek military and Frontex led to the death and missing of 2,051 migrants, according to UNHCR data portal. There have been also allegations that the pushbacks were done by MAST and border guards, military commandos, who forced migrants to board small inflatable boats. These pushbacks that are conceptualized as border violence breach the international law, constituting human rights violations while turning refugees' existence into disposable lives. These thanatopolitical borders, which is a term developed by Giorgio Agamben's conceptualization of the way in which exposure to death is integral to sovereign biopolitics, which is a process of governing migration through death, abandonment of people across deserts and seas, in the Sonoran and Mediterranean context. In reply to pushback allegations in July 2021, the Greek Prime Minister said, "I reject the concept of pushback as terminology. I reject it. There is no such meaning this word has in my vocabulary. But when a boat comes, we will look to do everything in our power to send this boat back where it started." The Prime Minister refers to the EU-Turkey statement that implements the deportation of migrants back to Turkey to control irregular migration. The legality of the statement is questionable as it breaches the international law, and more specifically, non-refoulement, which means sending boats back, could potentially have lethal consequences. An investigation carried out by Forensic Architecture revealed that 27,000 migrants traveling across the Aegean Sea to Greece from Turkey have faced driftbacks, the practice of being abandoned at sea. Cross-border tensions between Turkey and Greece as historical enemies are entangled with the management of migration, securitization, and border regimes in the European Union's multi-layered migration infrastructure that involves national, international, and supranational actors such as the UNHCR. Against the backdrop of these bordering regimes where humanitarian care provided by the supranational actors, the care of the migrants is turned into a closed camp model where refugees spend unknown periods of time in camps or urban areas where they are assisted by humanitarian actors. As a response to the inhumane conditions that refugees are forced to withstand, movement in Greece have been creating alternative solutions to the everyday needs of the refugees, by, for example, squatting abandoned buildings and self-organization, alternating themselves to government-run refugee camps in Athens. Although similar collective initiatives have been formed as a response to the Greek financial crisis in 2008, solidarities created especially by the radical left groups are mobilized to enable refugees to bypass the state-imposed closed camps and hotspots that function as detention centers. However, after the implementation of the EU-Turkey deal, many solidarity groups who've helped refugees in camps faced restrictions and even the arrests of members of solidarity groups, as well as the decision of squatting as a radical answer. The reestablishment of the borders, offering a counterexample of cohabitation and solidarity, when the right-wing New Democracy Party came into power. Squat evictions left many migrants without accommodation and added to their precarity. And during 2020, when COVID-19 happened, the Greek government announced that 11,000 refugees will be made homeless, as well as ending the EU cash assistance programs. When I first visited Prosvika through the refugees who were learning English in Cafe U, I came across with the squad's website, which mentioned the communicative struggles experienced in their multilingual environment. In a collective text, it was written, "In our neighborhood, there is a mixture of migrants, political refugees, marginalized social elements, political activists, property wanderers, and people who rent. It's difficult for this heterogeneous mixture to communicate due to language, culture, and political and social identity differences." I contacted the squad to find out more about how language and communication were part of their social and political struggle and whether I could participate in some of their everyday activities. Although self-organization is a common practice among urban movements in Athens, the arrival of the refugees in 2015 revitalized the movements, which have been active since 2008. Movements have been developed as a response to the weak welfare system, which date back to the post-war period to tackle lack of housing provision. Struggles over housing means that the state tolerated the squats, and legislation such as anti-parohi provided some security in the city of Athens, also known as the Summer of Migration. Solidarity structures in Athens, which originate in autonomous politics or anti-structures, seek to oppose and bypass the state to construct self-organized, self-managed solidarity economy that will eventually replace official institutions. Now, self-economization and self-education and self-organized healthcare clinics and security structures, self-defense groups to patrol the neighborhoods are an important structure of self-organization because this way humanitarian aid and government interventions could be blocked, and the practice of freedom or care of the self could be experimented. While self-defense is not a new construct for the movements in Exarchia, as they created groups of safekeeping, a kind of unarmed civilian militia to safeguard the neighborhood from drug dealers meant counter-conduct. There were rules that govern lexical choices when my interlocutors were, for example, collecting food from the street markets and during also assemblies. In one of our activities called skipping, where squatters collected food from the street markets, decisions were made about who will speak to the vendors and who will say what in which language. And often they formulated rules of interactions via formulaic expressions such as "Yasas, imaste apo prosvigika, echete kati." And this way, they shared these kinds of formulaic speech with one another. And my interlocutors emphasized that this way they anticipated that the vendors have more sympathy towards them, and that this evoked emotions about the Greek refugees from Asia Minor who lived in the neighborhood after the Greek-Turkish population exchange in the 1920s. A typical food gathering in the market lasted around 20 to 30 minutes at a very specific time at 3:45, and communicative exchanges with vendors were kept to the minimum. In these exchanges, squatters encouraged the Greek language over the English language, as the effect that Greek had on vendors was arguably more effective in getting the leftover fruits and vegetables. Temis, who was one of my interlocutors, mentioned they work on building relationships with vendors and create more awareness about their struggle. In addition, digital resources such as websites, Twitter accounts, and WhatsApp groups were formed to share counter information and communicate and alert the fellow citizens in case of potential threats, such as the presence of the strangers in the neighborhood. They had mikrofoniki, which is basically taking a microphone and talking on the street to show more visibility in public spaces. They also called for action on media platforms that are shared with other international self-organized individuals and collectives. In December 2021, a call for the defense of the neighborhood was announced on a website calling for international solidarity. The notion of defending the neighborhoods as Prosvika is worth examining. Squat evictions that started in 2019 alarmed many of the movements in Athens. The evictions implied that an attack on counter spaces on squats that hosted migrants will be responded by the squatters. Lexical choices such as invasion and defense infers in the case of a possible attack by the state, the neighborhoods will respond to these attacks strongly. Combative resistance and direct police confrontations are not uncommon in counter spaces such as the neighborhoods of Exarchia and Prosvika. But the text calls for actions such as counter information and expression of solidarity from the international groups, which infers support for resistance. The mobilization of language and discourse to combat any possible police intervention demonstrates how texts are produced and circulated to call for solidarity against potential threats from the authorities. This call for solidarity in terms of caring for the neighborhood resonates with how Foucault conceptualizes pastoral power, which is presented as distinctive in the role as it bestows on certain individuals, pastors, in instructing, caring for, and deriving legitimacy for the communities they serve. In this way, pastoral power is distinctive and it attends to the well-being and moral propriety of both individuals and communities simultaneously. Defense and resistance towards any possible invasion could be understood as a moral responsibility towards the community at risk of being homeless. In the same vein, during weekly assemblies that took place on Monday afternoons, squatters reiterated the possible intervention by the authorities. Vigilance towards anyone suspicious was emphasized. The presence of any stranger was shared among the squatters and immediate direct action to be taken if anything unusual happened in the neighborhood. Once this counter information was shared, squatters gathered in a communal space or any other location in the neighborhood to prevent any possible intervention. The text that you see on your screen now foregrounds the location of Prosvika, which is between the police headquarters and the Court of Appeals, which is in a way a siege of the community. The metaphor that is used, symbolic monsters, the mentioning of the memories of struggles of the working class, and the conflict between the neighborhood and the state power is re-emphasized. The repetition of our enemies is juxtaposed with humanity, freedom, and history, inferring antagonism of the state power towards what the neighborhood represents. For example, in this excerpt, one of my interlocutors and I were in the street market, collecting food, fruits and vegetables. My interlocutor informed me that the NGO workers in orange jackets, who also collected food from the market, was a di different di was completely different than what they were trying to do in the neighborhood. He separated their activity, which is collecting food from the street market for the neighborhood, from what the NGOs did. And he implied that NGOs, in a way, collaborated with the state, and that their position towards the state was completely the opposite. And then he also mentioned that the squatters try to do what they try to do is to survive by collecting food for the community. And in other words, they were taking care of the community. My purpose in this paper has been to argue how the shifting role of pastoral power, which means expertise, on counter spaces and ways in which it generates counter epistemologies and everyday practices that are entangled with wider logics of securitization of migration and solidarity spaces. It has been my intention to demonstrate how pastoral power as an analytical tool could help us to examine the processes and practices involved in securitization, and how this could potentially open up possibilities that make human agency as a destabilizing force to challenge governmental power. Pastoral power allows much more adequately for the possibility and range of potential consequences of resistance and contestation. In elaborating what Foucault put forward as counterconduct, we see the possibility of innovation and creativity in response to governmental power. The illegalization of migration and criminalization of solidarity, along with a weak welfare system through shifting from deficit to surplus, has brought individuals together to take care of their lives. Bordering regimes based on a security model boosted with armies of security actors, including security agencies, infrastructures such as camps, detention facilities, and so on. Language and discourse plays a key role in securitization of migration. Paradoxically, however, these discourses are counterproductive in mobilizing movements and individuals in taking control of their everyday lives, whether this is surveillance of their homes from rooftops or producing and circulating counter information for self-defense. Sociolinguistics allows us to examine inequalities and the burden of insecuritization in the everyday lived experiences of individuals who struggle with housing and unemployment on one hand, and illegalization and their criminalization on the other. Thank you for listening.